Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and here to wish you a happy Sunday. I hope you have had a good weekend. It is a long weekend for some people who have tomorrow off. So if you are out and about traveling or do anything special for the long weekend, please be safe. Hope that even if you are working, you have time to spend with family or, you know, all those things that are relaxing and restoring to our souls. I hope that you'll get some of that time in this weekend or on your next day off. So we, of course, are here to talk about the Bible text assigned for this week. This week is the 15th Sunday after Pentecost. Yep, still in that Pentecost season, still slogging our way through the very long season of Pentecost. 15th Sunday after Pentecost, and we will be talking in this episode about the Old Testament lessons, and then switching, of course, in Wednesday's episode to the New Testament lessons assigned for this week. So let's go ahead and get started. We are starting with the Old Testament reading from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, and 6 through 9. So now, Israel, give heed to the statutes and ordinances that I am teaching you to observe, so that you may live to enter and occupy the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. You must neither add anything to what I command you, nor take away anything from it, but keep the commandments of the Lord your God with which I am charging you. You must observe them diligently, for this will show your wisdom and discernment to the peoples, who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, "Surely this great nation is a wise and discerning people. For what other great nation has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is whenever we call to him? And what other great nation has statutes and ordinances as just as this entire law that I am setting before you today? But take care and watch yourselves closely, so as neither to forget the things that your eyes have seen, nor to let them slip from your mind all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children." So that is, again, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 through 2 and 6 through 9. If you happen to have read along and were looking at the text as I was reading it, you will see, as I did, that verse 9 ends in the middle of a sentence. It could easily be the end of a sentence, "make them known to your children and your children's children." It actually ends with an M dash, and so I went to look and see what chapter or what verse 10 says, and it does pretty much complete the thought. "Make them known," as I said, "to your children and your children's children." Verse 10 says, "How you once stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, when the Lord said to me, 'Assemble the people for me, and I will let them hear my words, so that they may learn to fear me as long as they live on the earth, and may teach their children to do so.'" Now, here is something else interesting that as I'm looking at this, verses 9 through 12, 12a, halfway through verse 12, no, verses 9 through 11, or excuse me, verses 9 through 11 are one sentence. It is a long sentence. I can see why we stopped at the end of verse 9, because, wow, that's a run-on sentence. But it does complete the thought, you know, with talking about the commandments that have been given. Make sure that you know them, make sure that your children know them, make sure that your children know them so that your children's children can know them, etc., to pass down along. Now, when you see the word Deuteronomy, you might not automatically think, "Oh, yay, a reading from Deuteronomy." When I see the word Deuteronomy, I usually think, "Oh, dear, lots of law or, you know, statutes." And we do get that in this in these verses, obviously, give heed to the statutes and ordinances that I am teaching you to observe, but rather than an entire laundry list of those statutes and ordinances, instead we get why they are being given. You may live to enter and occupy the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. If you're familiar with the story of the Exodus, then you know that they ended up wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, that Moses was able to see the promised land but not enter the promised land, which is something that I have always thought was horribly, horribly unfair, but we'll not go into that right at this exact moment. But so Israel is being given these statutes and ordinances, again, to live in relationship not only with God, but with one another. And if you are a regular listener, you've heard me talk about that before, that the commandments we are given throughout the Bible, whether in the Old Testament or the New Testament, really are ways and rules to live in relationship with each other, to live first in relationship with God, but then also to live in relationship with each other. And if you have been taken out of the land of Egypt, as the Israelites were, taken out of slavery and brought to a promised land, then I would imagine that God's going to want you to have ways to live in that promised land together so that you're living in right relationship with one another. And so God gives statutes and ordinances, not that we, like the Israelites, often pay attention. You know, some of us do really well and we try to keep commandments. We try to live according to God's word. And others are like, yeah, you know, I'm not feeling it today. I don't think I really need to pay attention to that particular commandment. You know, I mean, there's a lot of them in there that we ignore, but I do want to look at some commentary for this reading from Deuteronomy, and this commentary comes to us this week from Anathea Portier Young, Associate Professor of Old Testament at Duke Divinity School in Durham, North Carolina, and she says, Moses will never enter the land of promise, as I mentioned before. He will climb a mountain east of the Jordan, and from that height he will survey the wide and good land God is giving to Israel. And we see that in Deuteronomy 3, verse 27. And then he will die, which happens in chapter 4, verse 22, not too far after the verses that we read for today. He will never cross the river Jordan, and the children of the people who marched with him out of Egypt will bury his body in a valley in Moab. They will not mark his grave, or perhaps God will hide it so that no one will be tempted to bring him into the land of Canaan. Moses belonged to the wilderness generation. Which is actually kind of the kindest way I've ever heard that put. Moses belonged to the wilderness generation. It still doesn't take the sting off of it that Moses does not get to enter the promised land. He gets to wander in the wilderness. So if I'm feeling particularly cynical, I look at this story and I think, oh, poor Moses. He gets to wander in the wilderness for 40 years with a group of people he brought out of Egypt who are complaining, did I mention complaining? They're doing a lot of complaining. They wait until Moses leaves them to go up the mountain and talk to God, and then they create an idol, a golden calf to worship, because they're freaking out. They've been left in the wilderness, so we'll have to create this golden calf and worship it, because clearly God has deserted us. Oh, Moses spends 40 years herding cats through the wilderness and, you know, basically babysitting, and then doesn't get to see the promised land. But let's go back to that commentary. That's just the cynical part of me. Let's read a little bit more. They were almost the land of promise generation, but in the wilderness, their faith faltered. At Deuteronomy's beginning, Moses recalls for their children, now grown, the painful story of failure. From Mount Horeb, where God had given the Israelites the gift of the law, God led them to the edge of the beautiful land. God promised them victory, but at the edge of the beautiful land, they doubted God's word and refused to enter and claim the inheritance God had decreed for them. Oh, see, the Israelites, they're so human, aren't they? They are just so typical human of, we want this. We want this now. We want what you've promised us. here is what I have promised you. Look at this beautiful land. Ah, wait. I'm not so sure we want this. Can we back up a little bit? Just not quite sure I'm ready to take that other step and go in there. And later, the book of Numbers tells us, even Moses's faith faltered. God had instructed Moses in the power of the word, speak to the rock and it will gush water to sustain this thirsty people. But in the face of his people's thirst, Moses could not trust that a word would call forth living water. So he struck the rock. So his faith faltered. He was about halfway there. Not trusting in a word, trusting more in action, which a lot of us can probably relate to, right? I hear what you're saying, but show me. That I think a lot of us can relate to that. So because their faith faltered at the moment of action, a generation of Israelites freed from slavery in Egypt were condemned to die in the wilderness and never enter the land God had prepared for them. 40 years later, a new generation of Israelites stands on the threshold of promise. They are poised to exit the desert, depart from the land of a king who seeks their death, and enter a land flowing with milk and honey where rain falls from the sky. They will have blessings of life and love and children and fertile soil yielding abundant grain, wine, and oil. They will be free from disease and victorious over their enemies. Doesn't she write beautifully? I love how she is describing what we maybe are familiar with, maybe we're not as familiar with in the book of Deuteronomy. So the Israelites' faith falters, and they've now, 40 years on, most of that original generation have died, as you can imagine. Even the young children, a lot of them probably would have died. So it's a generation of people that doesn't even remember being slaves in Egypt. They've heard the stories, maybe, but they are more familiar with wandering in the wilderness. And so every promise now will be theirs, the commentator says, if only they trust. There's that sticky part again. If only they trust. How good are you at trusting? I'm not always so great at it. I have to admit, I am not always so good at trusting. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, but we do need to take a quick break. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
The GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We are talking currently about the reading from Deuteronomy, assigned for the 15th Sunday after Pentecost. And I left you before the break with that question, how good are you at trust? I am sad to say, not always the most trusting of souls. And yet sometimes I feel like I'm way too trusting. It really depends on the situation. And in terms of people, that is, it depends on the situation. In terms of God, I want to say that I trust God. And deep down in my core, I do. But how often do I falter when it comes to God's promises? Definitely more often than I could care to admit. Because, you know, we always trust in our own timing more than God's timing. We always tend to trust things that are tangible rather than intangible. So trust can be a hard thing. And now we have the Israelites who've been wandering in the wilderness, and they've just been shown the promised land if only they can trust. But she says to trust is a difficult thing to do. Moses has told the story of the wilderness generation to remind their children of faith's fragility. Now he must show them the source of its strength. He cannot cross with them into the land of promise, cannot carry them there, cannot believe for them. From this moment until the hour of his death, he can only pray for them, teach them, and proclaim for them the statutes, ordinances, and commandments that God has given them. So she asks a question now. Why should these commandments hold the key to life? How do they form the steel core of faith? And this part is in italics, so we need to pay attention. The commandments, she says, are the heart of Deuteronomy and the heart of God's teaching, or Torah, that defines Israel's life in relationship with God, with one another, and with the nations around them. See, there it is. Relationship with God, with one another, with the nations around them. So these statues, what are they? Why do they hold that key? Why are they the heart? Well, they teach worship. They establish norms for political, prophetic, and religious leadership. They mandate communal holidays, festivals, and times of rest. They place limits on the practice of war and blood vengeance. They ordain a just economy, communal care for the widow, orphan, and poor, and protection of those who are vulnerable. They sanctify labor, meals, and family life. In all of these ways, she says, and more, the commandments instruct Israel in love and give them strength for the life God has called them to live. The commandments are the path to life. They are God's word, but this word does not take root in the minds and hearts of the people by infusion, osmosis, or induction. It is not enough for God to inscribe the commandments on tablets of stone and for the people to carefully guard the tablets in the ark they have made. Moses and the preachers and believers and whoever else who follow him must proclaim the teaching again and again. Parents must repeat it to their children and their children's children. So the book of Deuteronomy is full of repetitions and is itself a repetition, a second iteration of Israel's story and the teaching God gave them. So remember earlier I said, I see Deuteronomy and I'm like, oh no, not Deuteronomy, laws and all of those things that are so boring to read through. And yet, that's exactly the point, repetition. These are supposed to be so well known to us that we live them without thinking it, that we teach them to our children without even needing to remind ourselves to teach them to our children. We are also standing at a threshold, she says. Our children are at a threshold, and we are their teachers, whether we are parents, whether we are teachers in a literal sense, maybe that's school life, home life, Sunday school, whether we're pastors, whether we're neighbors, deacons, elders, whatever it is, we are preparing them. We are their teachers. We are entrusted with this story of love that we are given in the Bible. And so we are entrusted to give that to our children. Don't rely on someone else to give that to your children. Don't be like, that's what the pastor's for. Oh, that's what Sunday school's for. Oh, that's what X, Y, and Z is for. Mm-hmm. It is. Your children are going to learn a lot from people who are teaching them in Sunday school or confirmation or Bible study. But you are their first teacher. And whether that's your children or your nieces and nephews or whoever it is who's important, whatever young person is important in your life, you are their teacher. And you teach with words, but you also teach by example. So we have to be reminded, what does it mean to live in relationship first with God and then with each other? Think of Deuteronomy. Maybe it's not your favorite book. Maybe it's not something that you would think, hey, I'm going to talk to my kids about Deuteronomy. No, I certainly wouldn't. I don't look at my nieces who range in age from 8 to 21 and think, let's sit down and have a good old conversation about Deuteronomy. But when I talk to them, I realize that I do talk to them about Deuteronomy. I talk to them about love. I talk to them about loving each other. I talk to them about loving their neighbor. I talk to them about what it means to live in the world as a child of God. How does that affect our lives? How does our being a child of God reflect in how we live? Does it? Well, if your answer is, I'm not sure, maybe you should look at that. I know I'm not perfect at this. Heck no, I'm not even close to being perfect at this. I feel like I fail more often than I get it right when it comes to my life of faith, when it comes to doing what I have been called to do. I am in constant conversation with God about, oh man, did I screw that up? I am so sorry. Can I try again tomorrow, please? And the beauty of God is that God always says, you know what? Of course. Yep, you can try again tomorrow. I love you, and we are going to work through this together. And that is the gift that we give our children. I love you, and we are going to work through this together. Let's back up a step and see what God says about how we treat our neighbor, how we treat those that we don't particularly care for very much, how we treat those who are vulnerable in our midst. And let's review that, and let's try again, because we are always on the threshold. We are always looking into that promised land, just about to take that step, that leap of faith, and trust that God is leading us in the right direction. Because we always are. No matter how many steps we've taken, that next step is still a step of faith. We're going to take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll be turning our attention to the psalm assigned for this week. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
To the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We just finished up talking about Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 through 2 and 6 through 9. And now we will be turning our attention to the psalm assigned for this week. And that psalm comes to us from, well, the book of Psalms, obviously, duh, from Psalm 15. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. It comes to us from Psalm 15, which is a very short psalm. 5 verses, and those verses are as follows. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? Those who walk blamelessly and do what is right and speak the truth from their heart, who do not slander with their tongue and do no evil to their friends, nor take up a reproach against their neighbors, in whose eyes the wicked are despised, but who honor those who fear the Lord, who stand by their oath even to their hurt, who do not lend money at interest and do not take a bribe against the innocent. Those who do these things shall never be moved. Psalm 15, 5 short verses. Starts with 2 questions. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? which might sound a little strange, but remember that they were still in the Old Testament, and a lot of things make reference to the Exodus, where God is said to actually be in the midst of the Israelites, that God abides among them in a tent, that God is on a hill, that God is on a holy hill. So who may dwell on that holy hill? Who may abide in God's tent? Whether that's metaphorical or if you want to picture it as an actual tent, you know, go ahead. This relates back to the Deuteronomy text, at least in my own brain, because it then gives a list of the type of person who who can abide in God's tent, who can abide on God's holy hill. Well, this is that type of person. We've just been through how to live in relationship, Deuteronomy, etc. Now I move to this sort of laundry list. And our commentary for this, for Psalm 15, comes from Esther M. Men, who is the Dean and Vice President for Academic Affairs, and Ralph and Marilyn Klein, Professor of Old Testament, the Lutheran School of Theology, Chicago, Illinois. That is a title. Wow. And Esther M. Men asks her own question. What makes a good guest? She says, at summer's end, when many people are returning from visits with family and friends, this is a timely question. There's an old joke that says a visitor and a fish smell the same after 3 days. Both stink. And my husband always has it's sort of a joke, and it's also sort of true, that guests have an expiration date, just like milk. So they don't get to stay forever. Kind of the same theory, but she says there are also guests who bring so much joy and contribute so richly to our well-being that they never wear out their welcome. We look forward to their coming and wish they could stay forever. Who is that in your life? Who do you wish would come and just, they settle in and they feel like they've been a part of your household forever? Maybe it's family, maybe it's friends, maybe it's that family of choice, but they just fit in so well and they're so wonderful to have around. You're like, no, I don't want you to leave. I think you should just live here. It doesn't matter that you have a life wherever you're visiting from. Just live here with us. Well, there are also instances, she says, when visitors become permanent members of a household. In our current economy, these arrangements are more common. I personally live in a neighborhood that has quite a few multi-generational families living in one house. It's always fun to see the generations interact with each other and to see just, you know, how they're living together and supporting one another in various generations. So, you know, we even in today's society are often not strangers, she says, to the dynamics of living closely together as guests and hosts. So Psalm 15 asks, who would make a good guest in God's home? The divine dwelling is identified poetically as a tent, recalling the tabernacle of the wilderness settings, and also as a holy hill, evoking the temple on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. In sacred spaces, she says, as fragile as a cloth structure or as solid as a mountain, God stays with Israel through changing times. What's more, God welcomes guests. Isn't that encouraging? Psalm 15 has been viewed as a liturgical entrance rite, but gatekeeping is not its purpose. Longer-term arrangements are at stake. What kind of a person may abide as a resident alien in God's house? The verb abide is related to the Hebrew word for the landless stranger whom Israel is charged to protect. So this gives us a slightly different view. It's not just the Israelites who are allowed to abide in God's tent, but it is strangers. It is aliens among us. It is immigrants. It is I already said strangers. You get the point. So after the first verse, the focus in Psalm 15 shifts abruptly to ordinary life. The rest of the psalm provides a thought-provoking answer to the question of who would make a good guest in God's home. And a series of descriptive verbs paints a portrait of the long-term visitor who would gladden God's heart. what one does defines the person, whether acting for good or refraining from harm. Acting for good or refraining from harm. It's an interesting way to look at that. This psalm, she says, has a teaching purpose. It encourages us to think about how we as individuals, families, and communities are invited to live in God's presence with joy and integrity. She says that all of the readings for this week teach about values and behaviors. And of course, we can see exactly that from what we just read in Deuteronomy. We'll be seeing more of that in the texts that we talk about on Wednesday from the New Testament. The portrait of an ideal guest opens with a three-part summary of positive traits. She says the best guests are those who walk blamelessly and do what is right and speak truth from their heart. She expands on this and says additional nuances of this beautiful orientation to the life of faith are captured by an alternative phrase. Paraphrase, the ideal guest would be the person who walks with integrity, does what leads to reconciliation, and acknowledges truth when making decisions. That is her translation. Walking suggests that all we do is a lifelong journey in God's company. What is right refers to the quality of relationships fostered by our behavior. The heart in Hebrew anthropology is the organ of deliberation and commitment to future action. Integrity, goodwill, and honesty are hallmarks of daily life with God. Isn't that lovely as we walk with God through life and we are looking for our actions should involve integrity, goodwill, and honesty. So there's so much more. I mean, there's so much involved in these texts. I mean, this is slightly metaphorical in who can live in God's tent, you know, on the holy hill. That's more than just a physical place. That's a way of living in the world. That's a way of being in the world. But this is also, I mean, there are some, whenever these verses come up, whenever these passages come up, it's more than just living in relationship, because it is. It's more and less than living in relationship, because of course it is about living a relationship with God, with each other, with the world around us. And that can have legal ramifications, right? There are so many commandments that talk about what you should do if X, Y, and Z happen so that you can have a peaceful and just society. So it's not just about relationships, it's about laws and community, etc. But at the same time, it is just about relationship. So she finally concludes with saying that the description of the ideal guest is not exhaustive, but it is enough to suggest a whole way of life. There is resilience and stability in being God's guest. Like the firm mountain of Zion itself, the person who stays close to God will not be moved. This promise does not exclude challenges and profound experiences of loss. Those, of course, are still going to be in there. Our life is still going to present us with challenges. Our life is still going to present us with loss. How do we respond to those? How do we respond to the good times? How do we respond to the horrible times? How do we respond in God? Well, this gives us a whole way of life. And as God's guest, that gives us a stability, because we're more than just God's guest. We are God's children. And that gives us the stability that when we stay close to God, we will not be moved. Even though life is crumbling around us, even though things are going so bad, we still have that relationship with God, and hopefully that relationship with each other, to give us that stability, to give us that jumping off point. My life is great. How do I live in relationship with others? My life is terrible. How do I live in relationship with others? That is the question that we ask ourselves. What does God tell us about how we live in relationship with others? And I think that's a really good place to stop for the week and go into the week and think about, that sounds terrible. You go and think about that. No, but go and think about how you live in relationship with God. Is it different when things are going great? Is it than it is when things are not going great? Or is your relationship with God different? Is your relationship with the people around you different? not necessarily good, bad, etc., etc. It's just something to pay attention to. See what's going on when your life is great. See what's going on when your life is not so great. How do you respond? How does your faith respond? We talked about, so I would say that today's texts are about rules, but also about stepping out in faith and how our life revolves around trust and faith and how that can be hard, right? To take that step of faith. But we are given ways to do that in things that may seem like an endless list of rules. We're really given tools to help us step out in faith, live in relationship with God and with each other. So I hope you'll take some time to ponder that this week. Maybe something brilliant will pop up into your brain. You can share it with me. I would love to hear from you. You can find me on social media, of course, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. But in the meantime, I hope that you go into your week and think about how your relationship with God is affecting that week. Because as I say at the end of every podcast, you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Take that with you into your week and see if it has any effect on how you approach that week. Thank you so much for joining me. Please join me again on Wednesday. And I'm going to say it again. Please remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.